we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a tip from an NHS leaflet on irritable bowel syndrome, read by Alan Smith.
If you're having difficulties when trying to pass a motion, it may help if you place your feet on a stool.
Our thanks to Mary Gold for getting to the bottom of that. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Vicky Pepperdine? And opposite them, on my left, Mark Steele and Susan Kalman. So, Francis, who's made a big mistake?
Ah, it's our old friend Brexit. It's going to go on forever. You think we're bored with it now. Imagine what it's going to be like in 30 years' time on the News Quiz, when News Quiz panellists yet unborn are going to be asked these questions. How's Brexit going? I think we're moving towards negotiating a trade deal with Europe, but it all took a step back when the Walloons kicked up rough, and it's going to go on forever. The only light relief is going to be people getting the word wrong on Thursday this week, as it might be yesterday or the day before if you're listening to the repeat, or 30 years ago if you're on Radio 4 Extra. John McDonnell, the Shadow Chancellor, made a speech. He was reading out his lines and he said very solemnly, thanks to this government's irresponsibility, we're hurtling towards a chaotic and damaging breakfast. The leader of the Welsh Tories did that at the Tory conference last month, this breakfast Brexit lark. And I thought, actually, it's going to happen more and more often, because now when people say Brexit, they're going to be telling us, mustn't say breakfast, because actually, I think we've all had chaotic and damaging breakfasts in our time. I keep thinking to myself now, breakfast, Brexit, breakfast, and it's going to be just like Radio 4 presenters who have to talk about Jeremy Hunt. So, God's sake. It's been yet another week in Brexit. It's so exciting that actually the Walloons made the front pages of the newspapers. And the only other excitement was Theresa May, which I think the question might have been about. The Guardian got very excited. They had a scoop. What she said privately to some bankers in the city just before the referendum was that she was in favour of Remain and that she thought Brexit was a bad idea. Whereas what she said in public was that she was in favour of Remain and she thought Brexit was a bad idea. But actually, the really newsworthy bit was where she delivered this speech, which was Goldman Sachs. And that's the same bank where Hillary Clinton delivered her speeches a few years ago that caused such a fuss. She was paid hundreds of thousands of dollars, Hillary Clinton, whereas Theresa May does it for nothing. But it does look a bit embarrassing for her, given all that stuff in her conference speech about how we're for the many, not the few. And then she goes and gives a private speech to the few and saying, she says something like, the international elites, the fat cats, I'm coming after you. And what she meant, it now turns out, was, I'm coming after you because I was rather wondering if you'd like me to come to your boardroom and give you a little speech. So that's about it, really. And the good news is that growth is a bit bigger than expected, 0.5% in the last quarter, and Nissan are going to build some more cars in Sunderland. And the bad news is that Jeremy Corbyn attempted a joke at Prime Minister's questions, but he won't be doing that again. It was something to do with Baldwin. And he made the mistake of prefacing it by saying, I spent 2 days thinking of this.
Goldman Sachs, they've got this programme, Talks at GS, in which high achievers reflect on their
successes.
Yeah, they're
usually some people who've climbed Everest or something.
Yeah, well, the person before her was Lloyd Grossman.
The same thing. The
Guardian described the man behind the eponymous sources.
Well, I think it's quite funny that there's this sort of perception that what you say to bankers stays in the room. Yeah. What happens at Goldman Sachs stays at Goldman Sachs.
There's a lot of people that voted to leave and then almost immediately regretted it. And I do feel sorry for them, because if only there'd been some sort of indication that a vote for leave was going to be counted as a vote for leave. There was one thing I saw, this one article, I can't remember where I saw it, it said, now we don't have to take any notice of nonsense such as the European Water Directive. And I thought, that's a funny thing to get across about. So I looked it up, and this is the body from Europe that says that your water has to be a certain level of cleanliness. So there's people going, no one from Germany is going to tell me my water can't be full of maggots. I'm going to be on the pan all day with gastroenteritis, doing it through the eye of a needle, puking guts out because my tea's full of globules and raw sewage. I can if Merkel says I can or not.
At last, a voice for reason.
And old people, I know we go, they go, oh, don't think it's all the old people, but it was quite a lot of them. The bit I'm looking forward to is in the care homes when someone has to go, Mrs. Watkins, it's about your cataract operation Tuesday. Yeah, it's not going to be done by Dr. Patel anymore because of the vote. He's had to go back to India. It's going to be done by Nathan. He's got a B-tech in nail care. What this country did in the summer, we're England, we don't need no one else, we used to run the world, we're better than anyone else, we're on it. And then 3 days later, lost to Iceland, that's what we did.
I'd like to say just publicly, if anyone wants to pay me £100,000 to speak to some bankers, I am available. I can't guarantee what it is I'll say to you, but I am quite literally willing to do virtually anything for £100,000. I wouldn't, you know, neglect my principles, but I would put them aside. I'm absolutely there for you. I will be your private dancer. I will dance for money.
Prestigiously, this is the leaked audio published by The Guardian, which revealed that Theresa May was an even bigger fan of the EU than she let on. Mrs. May made these comments at a secret meeting of investment bankers, a phrase sure to gladden the heart of anyone who's suspicious about the way the world is organised. The recordings take you back to a simpler Britain when May was just a plucky home secretary trying to make it in the big city, juggling love and life while pursuing her dreams of becoming a street dancer and rounding up all the illegal immigrants and chucking them in the back of a van. Mrs. May said before the referendum that businesses would leave. Now she says they won't, which leaves us with only two possibilities. Either she's changed her mind, or there are two Theresa Mays, one who only speaks the truth, and the other who only lies. One of them guards the path to future prosperity, one of them the path to stagnation, and you only get to ask one of them one question. In other big European news, the Calais camp has been demolished, having been full of over 8,000 people desperate to come to this country and enter the new Jerusalem that is Britain post-Bake Off. 38 councils have refused to take in migrants, but to be honest, even if you've spent your life struggling against the arbitrary brutality of an evil dictatorship, you may still not be ready to experience the fresh hell of obtaining a residence parking permit from a British local authority. Meanwhile, the UK economy grew 0.5% in the 3 months after the Brexit vote. Of course, you all know this. You've all seen the wild, spontaneous celebrations overtaking the streets and have no doubt joined in with the victory cries of sovereignty, sovereignty, sovereignty. 2 points to Francis. Vicky, who's leaving over a jet plane?
This is about Heathrow Airport, third runway, and that's now been given the backing of the government, and that's going to go ahead. So there's a bit of a confusion, because with all the Brexit and everything, I thought we didn't really want people to come here, and my concern is that building an extra runway is going to be giving out a sort of misleading message. But apparently, I think what's happened is that the Transport Secretary has tried to put a fun spin on it all by suggesting that this third runway is in fact a ramp over the M25. You know, he's obviously sitting in his bedroom and playing with his Skelextric and thought, how can I make this runway a bit more fun, came up with this idea. So I think the idea is that you pull the plane back sharply to give it some traction and it shoots off up into the air. What he said was that this idea of building this runway over the M25 was going to be cheaper and quicker than building a tunnel under the runway.
And planes having to take off from underneath
a motorway. That's it, becoming sort of, that's it, a couple of Thunderbirds, essentially. I mean, I personally phrases like reassuringly expensive when I'm talking about air travel, but, you know, that's a personal choice, really. And I suppose my main worry is what happens if the airplane that's about to take off actually falls off onto the M25, because really that will cause a tailback. and then, oh, yes, there's a bit of furore, obviously, because it's an unpopular decision, and Zach Goldsmith has given up his seat. But, yeah, he's forced a by-election in Richmond Park, which... if you're going to have a by-election, nice place to have it. Take a thermos of tea, some sandwiches, and try and avoid Fenton.
I'm terrified of flying. Absolutely terrified of airplanes. Oh, yeah. I've had hypnotherapy to try and get over it. The last thing I want to hear is, we're now approaching the ramp. And neither do I want a plane taking off from inside a tunnel. Neither of those things. But I watched Chris Grayling and he was awfully chipper about it, wasn't it? He was like, it's going to be amazing, it's going to be amazing. It's going to really help connectivity in the whole UK. It's going to help everyone in the whole UK. And I'll tell you now, that's not going to help me get the bus into Glasgow city centre.
Heathrow's huge and it feels like you've walked so far that you think, oh, when I get out the other end, have I got to Tunisia then? It's just... I went from Guernsey to Alderney, right? Little, this tiny little plane last year in the Channel Islands. And it's only, it's 10 minutes this flight. And this, I don't mind the plane was small. I thought, all right, it's only 10 minutes, I'll put up with it. But it was like, you know when you get someone's car and it's a really old car and every bit of it, off the hinges, and there was all bits of holes in the ceiling where kids have gone with a biro and no one's bothered. And there was, it was a right state. And the window flapped, so the draft come in while you were in the air. And there was an East European pilot, and there was 12 seats, and the equivalent of the sort of, here is your exits, here and all that, the equivalent was, he just turned around and said, much wind today, so very much bumpy. And that was...
Last time I was on a flight to Dublin, it was a gale force wind, and I was a bit terrified, and I started crying quite quickly into the journey, which I think is always reassuring for the other passengers. So I started crying, and I sing to take my mind off it. And unfortunately, I sing quite a hardcore gangster rap song. Anyway, I was singing this quite explicit rap song, and the guy next to me went, oh, are you Susan Kalman? And I went, yes, I am. And he went, how's the news quiz? And I said, it's fine. And he was very sweet, actually. He was a nurse who saw I was in distress and simply asked me questions about the news quiz for the next 35 minutes. And is my old
sort of
nice man...
dispersing that with bits from Notorious B.I.G.?
Yes.
As in Derry, right? Now, because Derry, people are very excited in Derry because obviously it's, you know, it's all been through troubles and now they're all very optimistic. But the one bit that's crumbling, the railway network, right? It takes longer now to go from Derry to Belfast on a train than it did in 1880, right? It's the truth. It's a little single-track railway. And I was talking to this sort of rail enthusiast over there who's campaigning to get the railway modernised. And he said at one point, this sort of little single-track railway, about 3 miles out of Derry, goes across Derry Airport. It actually goes across the corner of the runway. And it's so antiquated that the air traffic people at Derry, they've just got it written on a bit of biro and a bit of paper there, a bit of biro, just, oh, this is the time the plane's come in, you know. So if one's coming in, there'll be a train along, so be careful. But he said he was sort of sitting going forward, and everyone else in this sort of in his carriage was going looking the other way. And he could see that this plane was coming in as it was getting towards the bit where it goes over the runway. And he said, oh, and I thought, no one's seen. Oh, this isn't good at all, is it? The plane's coming in and we're just getting... And the driver must have not been able to see it. He was just looking forward. And then he must have seen it all of a sudden and gone, oh, yeah, bloody plane right overhead. Poof, and the thing's gone, and there's bits of laptop and coffee and bits of paper everywhere. And Jesus Christ, there's a plane right overhead. And it's gone... And after about a minute, it's gone dug-dug-dug-dug and gone on its way and everyone's recovered. And he said it got in to the next station and he heard the driver and the guard both get out and he heard the driver shout down to the guard, back at the airport, who has priority there?
Macrocosmically, this is the news that Zach Goldsmith has resigned as an MP due to his environmental concerns over Heathrow. The resulting by-election could well result in the election of a Liberal Democrat MP, so Zach's certainly doing his bit to help one endangered species. The third runway would cause the widespread displacement of many local people, creating a power vacuum which will inevitably lead to the rise of ISIS in the Harmondsworth area. Chris Grayling has said that the new runway could involve planes taking off from the M25, which, while terrifying, will certainly add a much-needed frisson of excitement to Radio 2's traffic and travel. The new runway will take the form of a ramp built over the M25, or, if Brexit hits really hard, it'll be the big car park behind the harvester. 3 villages will be destroyed to make way for the new runway. Interestingly, the government planned to destroy these villages using a bulldozer rather than the traditional method of simply closing down any nearby industry. Also this week, CO2 emissions in our atmosphere passed a symbolic point that means they will now never drop below 400 parts per million, at least within all of our lifetimes. Something that certainly gave me pause for thought when I was in the back garden yesterday afternoon lugging another fridge onto the bonfire. 2 points to Vicky. Mark, who's going to start World War III?
Well, Hillary Clinton, according to Trump, but this is just sort of... The terrible thing with this now is that Trump can just say anything and it's not at all surprising. It's like going into the local park and seeing a bloke with a tin of special brew going, come over here, you wet myself, dry me crotch with a tea towel. Who's going to pay for the tea towel? The Mexicans are going to pay for the tea towel. And going, oh, marvellous news, only 40% of America is going to vote for him as the most powerful man on the planet.
I started following Donald Trump on Twitter, and it's an extraordinary experience. Because his tweets are almost incomprehensible. They're like a clue or a cryptic crossword or a clue from... Do you remember 3-2-1, the show 3-2-1, where you could never quite understand how to win the Ford Fiesta? It's when you read them, you have to spend ages going, what? Where's the pirate? I don't know what's going on. And it's a difficult decision for the Americans, really, to vote for Clinton, who could potentially take them into conflict, because she's talking about no-fly zones, which could bring her into direct conflict with the Russians, or a man who would be rejected from a Trump impersonation competition for being a bit too much. What I like is that Janet Jackson's Nasty, don't know if you remember that classic track.
Very well.
After... Did you often dance to it, Miles?
Ooh, you nasty boy, nasty, nasty, nasty boy. Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. God, I used to get nuts to that. Well, I wouldn't have anything on by the end of it.
The one positive that's come out of all of this, really, is after Trump's you're such a nasty woman, is that Janet Jackson's Nasty is going up the popular music charts. And it's always nice to see somebody doing well after such a long time. And I didn't know you liked that song quite as much, Miles. Did you grind?
No. Now, listen, Francis and Vicky, he can't be as bad as these two are saying. Talk us through some of Trump's good points.
Do you want to start, Francis? Kick us off on that one.
Yes. Well, you must know some, Miles.
Yes, Miles, back to you with
well,
that one.
Well, there's lots to sort of like about him, isn't there? I suppose he's just one of the... He's got a sort of zen quality, hasn't he? You kind of feel...
Well, he's
just
seasonal.
You feel
safe,
don't
he
you?
He is seasonal because he does look quite like a pumpkin.
Yes, this is his moment.
You put little candles behind his eyes.
He makes you feel better about yourself.
Warm and autumnal, yeah. Not very.
No one has more respect for women than he does, though.
No,
that's actually scientifically proven. That is true. It shows how we've moved on. Because you remember about 40 years ago when Jimmy Carter was running for the presidency. The biggest scandal of the campaign was when he said in an interview that he had, once or twice in his life, looked on women with lust in his heart. And outrage went on for the rest of the campaign. How could he do such a thing? And it really was quite damaging for him. Once or twice. I mean, now Trump says what he says, and people say, oh, yeah, well, that's what they do these days, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Farage said he's not running for Pope. Yes. So that was sort of, yes. You know... Great, well, get on with it then.
Also, it was 11 years ago. He was only 58. I mean, we all do things...
We all do things
in our youth that we regret. You can't hold someone to account for things they did back when they were 58.
He does a particular gesture with his hand. He does a pointy gesture when he goes, believe me, and it's hypnotic to watch him.
And those are fake arms, you know, because his real ones are kind of groping the women under the table.
It's not just the small hands, it's like he's got the... It's like Kenny Everett. Did Kenny Everett not have...
Yes.
Big hands. It's that kind of... Someone else is operating him from the anus. One of the things that's most distressing is... I saw a picture of a woman at a Trump rally and she had drawn on her own T-shirt. I always think it looks very professional when you draw on your own T-shirt. She'd drawn on her own T-shirt, Trump can grab this, and drawn an arrow. And you look at it and think, maybe we should just leave them to burn.
Swimmingly, this is the claim that a Clinton presidency would lead to World War III, made by Republican candidate and friend of the show, Donald J. Trump. The trouble is that Clinton and Putin, they don't get on, and you have to say, what is wrong with her? He's clearly one of the good guys. Sometimes he'll send neighbouring countries, unprompted and unasked for, a whole load of tanks. simply out of the goodness of whatever he has instead of a heart. I mean, how can she not get that? She should be in jail. Clinton has called for the establishment of no-fly zones over Syria. No-fly zones are not the most popular of zones, as evidenced by their marked absence from all six series of The Crystal Maze. Trump has said that Clinton's foreign policy would trigger World War III, whereas his plan would trigger World War IV, which I think we can all agree is literally one better. 2 points to Mark. Susan, whose expenses have proved expensive?
Labour has been fined £20,000 by the Electoral Commission for failing to declare all of its general election expenses. It was about £123,000 and they forgot to put in. The exciting thing is that from this, we finally know exactly how much the Edstone costs. Remember those great... Remember, do you ever think back in fondness about Ed Miliband? Not really. And the thing is, I now know how much it costs to get an 8'6", 2-tonne slab of limestone with things written on it for the garden. And it's £7,614. You can't say no to that. I don't think you can get it at your regular garden centre. I think you might have to send away maybe to Amazon for it, but it's not the only case that's come forward, but I think it's one of those rules that you're meant to tell people exactly how much you spend, and they didn't.
Does this count as electoral fraud, or is this electoral incompetency?
I think incompetence, absent-mindedness, that sort of thing. But he might, you know, now could be his time, Ed, I think. Now, all this week, I've been so excited seeing all these conservative American websites with pictures of Miliband all over them, with a circle round him on the photo saying, identified Hillary Clinton's hitman and procurer. Mm. Somehow they saw a picture of Bill Clinton, I think it must have been at the Olympics opening ceremony or something, shaking hands with Nick Clegg, and there was Miliband a couple of seats along, and they had this big white circle round him saying, identified, this is Hillary's hitman. The man who pimps for her. And says, no wonder he lost the election. Poor chap, he couldn't have gone to sleep. Must have been exhausted.
What else were they spending money on, Labour?
Well, there were lots of merchandise. I think there were various T-shirts with an arrow pointing downwards saying...
Yeah. Give me Ed.
Yeah. Acrobatically, this is the largest fine in Electoral Commission history, £20,000, which was levelled at the Labour Party for failing to declare all of its 2015 general election expenses. To be honest, Labour would have done just as well taking all the money they spent in 2015 and putting it on a horse. Even a horse that on closer inspection turned out not to be a horse at all, but a dead St Bernard on which someone had optimistically fixed a saddle. £7,000 of this money was spent on the Ed Stone, Ed Miliband's list of policy pledges carved in granite. Labour have promised not to make the same mistake again. At the next election, the list of pledges will instead be tattooed onto the body of a surprisingly up-for-it John McDonnell. Still, the £20,000 fine handed out to Labour is the largest ever imposed in the history of the Electoral Commission, sparking joyous celebrations among supporters who had long given up hope of the party coming first in anything ever again. 2 points to Susan. And at the end of round one, the scores are Mark and Susan have 4, but Francis and Vicky have 5. Yay. We start round two with a poster spotted at the Theatre Royal in Brighton.
Adapted and directed by Philip Breen, Lady Chatterley's Lover. Coming soon.
Our thanks to Martin Lightowler for sending us that accidental bit of filth. Francis, who is not impressed?
I'm not impressed. Would that do?
Yep, 2 points.
There's a government-financed thing called the Press Recognition Panel, which has had the cushiest job in the world for the last couple of years, because they've got about £3 million from the government and a very natty office building designed by Richard Rogers. And they've had absolutely nothing to do because they're meant to be approving press regulators and there haven't been any approved press regulators. So once a year they put out an annual report saying, well, we've had a look, but there don't seem to be any press regulators that we've approved yet, so can we get on with planning our Christmas party and our next outing? And then this week, finally, they approved a regulator, an outfit called Impress, which is mainly financed by Max Mosley via a Mosley family trust. I mean, a couple of other people who've given a little bit of money. J.K. Rowling is one of them, but it's mainly a Max Mosley enterprise, a Mosley enterprise. And he's given £3.8 million to this thing, Impress, which set itself up as a regulator. And apart from, you know, the main challenge was, we don't want the press to be regulated by all these vested interests and people, you know, mega-rich press barons. We want it to be mega-rich Formula One barons instead. They're so much more reasonable about these sorts of things. They don't bear any grudge against newspapers just because of that unfortunate business with the women and the dungeon and the stuff. Anyway, the Mosleys are backing this impress thing, and it hasn't done terribly well so far in signing up publications. It's got, I think, about just over a dozen so far that it's approved, and they're mainly the odd parish magazine in the Western Isles, and I think there's a website in Nottinghamshire, and the Brixton Bugle, mainstream media scum, and there's an outfit called View in Belfast, which says it's a social affairs magazine. I looked at the current issue, and the cover headline is "Art washes away from the soul the dust of everyday life." And I was so tempted to complain to Impress about this. So as completely unsubstantiated, art washes away from the soul the dust of everyday life. They have any evidence of this whatsoever, any multiple sources? No, they do not. They just print any old thing that comes to their head, think they can get away with it. Well, not so. Now they've signed up with Impress, they have to face the consequences or they'll lose their kite mark of quality. The thing is that Karen Bradley, very famous person who is apparently the culture secretary, to everyone's amazement, I don't even know any Tory MPs who've ever heard of her or met her. It's extraordinary. She has somehow become the culture secretary, and she surfaced briefly this week to say that she wouldn't yet be triggering Section 40, not to be confused with Article 50, or indeed Fun Boy 3, or all those other lovely word number combinations, level 42. And Article Section 40 is the bit of the 2013 Act that says when it's triggered, if you haven't signed up for, as it now is, Impress, then terrible punitive things will happen to you. But if you have signed up, you can't go wrong. Even if you print the foulest libels, if they stop printing all this blither about art washing away the dust from your soul, if they started running the most libelous stories about blameless individuals and got sued, even if they lost, that magazine wouldn't have to pay any of the costs, either its own or the other side's, because that's how it works if your government approves.
I think the marvellous thing there is not only has Francis won 2 points on the news quiz, he's also become the world champion of just a minute.
Hedonistically, this is the news that Max Mosley's Impress has been approved as the UK's first state-sanctioned press regulator. Impress aimed to put fairness and accuracy at the heart of Britain's news reportings. Anyone who doesn't sign up to Impress will have to pay the costs of anyone who brings a libel action against them, whether they win or lose, which sounds like an absolutely terrible idea. Although, legally, I'd probably be better advised to describe it as wonderful. Newspapers will be so frightened of losing money in court, they won't print anything controversial about anyone, which sounds bad, but on the upside, people will be able to do whatever they like to, for instance, goats, and they won't be able to touch you for it. It's a goat lover's charter, basically. 2 points to Francis. Vicky, what new property is to die for?
This morning I thought, well, I'm going on the news, because I better have a look at the news. And so I opened my laptop. I'll have a look. And then I opened my laptop, and the minute you open anything, you sort of get bombarded with that sort of sidebar of shame thing, you know, that thing where it says, you wrinkly old cow, get some cream and paste your face up.
This was the Financial Times.
Yeah. That's the very one. And then there was something about belly fat, which, you know, I thought, God, I've got to cover up this webcam. But anyway, so I did find this story. Burial mounds are back in fashion. I must admit, I got sidetracked trying to find the news by this strapline that said, the real reason we don't read about Paris Hilton anymore. And I thought, you know, what is the real reason? What is the real reason? And I couldn't find it because I clicked on it. It said, you'd be amazed what the original stars of Zed cars look like now. Yeah. And, you know, and that catapulted me into a sort of 10 interesting facts about cheese, which weren't that interesting. Wrinkle cream came up again. I panicked and bought a pot of repointing face paste or something. Which I hope works. And then I finally got through to this Zed cars thing, and it turns out they're all dead. Which I suppose I should have, you know, it wasn't a surprise. That was quite a long time ago. But anyway, then that did link me back to this burial mound story, which, against the odds, I saw on my computer. So burial mounds are back in fashion. Apparently it's a sort of a dome thing, and there are niches where you can put your loved ones.
What? I don't understand what it is.
It's sort of like a dome. It's like a sort of...
What, and you're just piled up?
Like a sort of stacking system for urns, essentially. Yeah.
So,
but it's quite sort of craft and stone.
When you see those car parks in London where they stack the cars up and move them round.
The bodies in.
It's very much
like
that.
We cannot remember where we parked Alfred.
It's interesting to think, because I just made a will, because I think it's an important thing to do, and I want to be cremated, and I was thinking about where I wanted my ashes to be scattered, because I don't necessarily want my ashes just sitting on the mantelpiece, do you know what I mean, just kind of being there all the time. I mean, I want my wife to keep them for a while and mourn deeply, obviously, but after 20 years or so, she should probably get rid of them.
Are you going to have them stirred in with the cat litter?
Where do I spend the most time? And I calculated I spend most of my time at Euston Station. So I've literally put in my will, please scatter my ashes at Euston Station. So if anything happens to me, look out for that outside the Burger King about 11 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, God. And then, because of you, there'll be an announcement. I'm afraid that the 4:31 to Watford has been delayed due to ashes on the line.
Well, they can use the ashes to dry up a spillage.
They're not using my ashes to dry up vomit.
Well, just specify. I hope you specified that in the will, Susan.
No, but I'm going to be phoning my lawyer after this to specify. I would like them beautifully scattered from platform one, where the sleeper train leaves from.
But they could have a sweet little statue of you at Euston, rather like Greyfriars Bobby, is that the thing?
And you can touch my nose for luck.
Finally, this is the news that prehistoric stone tombs used to store the ashes of loved ones are being built in Britain for the first time in thousands of years. Personally, I much prefer to bury our dead the traditional way, in the ground, shortly before tarmacking a third runway over the top of them. At least that way it's slightly trickier for them to rise up out of their tombs to once more do battle with the living, which, as any undertaker worth their salt will tell you, is quite the occupational hazard. I suppose this is the beginning of hipster burials. It costs between £2,000 and £5,000, but I think that's a small price to pay to have somewhere for your loved ones to come and sit and remember how you used to be such a poser. Of course, this is a far more eco-friendly way of disposing of a corpse than many other methods, such as cremating a body by spraying a full can of Lynx Africa through an open flame. 2 points to Vicky. Susan, have a listen to this. Susan, who stood out like a sore thumb?
What a terrible story this is in a way for the person involved. The British Museum had hired out their sculpture gallery for some form of corporate event, as these people do, and a waiter was getting ready for the event, and he dropped something, probably a vol au vent, and he tried to pick it up, and as he got up from picking up the vol au vent, or sausage roll, I mean, I don't want to be prescriptive, but his head bumped what is called the Townley Venus statue, which is a very, very ancient, very precious statue, and he knocked the thumb off this incredibly precious statue. Now, you can only imagine what... You know, we've all done things in our life which, you know, have been difficult, but knocking the thumb off a Venus statue in the British Museum has to rank quite highly in kind of workplace accidents. And, I mean, the statue's fine, but how's the man, Miles?
Do we know that it's a man?
Well, it said waiter, and usually the press will say waitress if it's a woman because they use kind of gender normative terms like that. I mean,
it hasn't gone the way of the word actor, for instance.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. I mean, sometimes I'm still called a comedian by some audiences.
Anyone here cause serious damage to an important piece of archaeology?
Well, I wouldn't have thought it mattered very much knocking the thumb off because he was only serving finger food anyway.
I like the way some people really enjoy it. Nope, no one's gone for it. Deserve more, Francis. It deserved more.
I'm sorry.
My favourite museum, Miles, is in your hometown in Monmouth. I went in there, no one else in there except a woman behind a desk, free to get in. And I thought, oh, I'll have a look at a sword. Definitely a sword, that is a sword. And then a bloke came in behind me and he went to the other side and he was having a look at a coin. And then the phone rang and the woman behind the desk picked it up. She said, I'll have to call you back. It's gone absolutely crazy in here. That is a museum.
No, you're right. I love the Pencil Museum in Keswick.
Oh, yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
amazing. And if you go into the Pencil Museum in Keswick, it's so sweet. They've got photographs of celebrities that have been at the Pencil Museum in Keswick, and it's like Phil Jupiter's is up there.
Phil Jupiter's has been to at least three different pencil museums in Britain, he told me, somewhat
really?
Proudly. Yeah.
And
how many are there?
14. Monosyllabically, this is the news that a waiter at the British Museum accidentally knocked off the right thumb of the Townley Venus while serving at a corporate event. None of the guests noticed the thumb had come off as they were too busy drunkenly copulating atop the Rosetta Stone. 2 points to Susan. Mark, who's given daylight saving a kick in the Balearics?
So that's Ibiza, isn't it? Isn't there? The clocks aren't going to go round. The clocks go round this weekend, don't they?
They go round. Yeah. They go round.
They
go round almost continually.
Twice a year.
They go round like clockwork, Mark.
Yeah, do they?
Ideally, yeah.
You know what I mean. And then, but they're not going to go round in Ibiza, is that right? Or the. It's going to be the same time.
Ibiza has been frozen in time.
Everyone's off their heads on E, and they. What's the point of the clocks going round when people won't even notice? Is that the answer?
Yes. That is. If that is not the answer, it's got several words in common.
Man, you just stay the same time, man.
Mark, that is absolutely rigorous. That's like Francis's press regulation answer. I mean, really. No further questions,
Your Honour. I don't really understand anything very much, but this is that the clocks changed for a reason that is beyond almost anyone, because in 1234 it was handy for the odd, I don't know, dodo farmer to have the light change or something in the end of October, and we haven't got round to changing that. And so we've still got this system where just as it's getting dark and miserable, so English, let's make it more dark and miserable. There's some people still enjoying a little bit of the evening. There you are, clocks go round, that sorted you out. And this isn't going to happen in Ibiza, or there's a campaign for it not to happen in Ibiza. I don't know if it is going to actually happen or not. Do I get a bonus point for this? And that... Isn't that right? It's something like that, isn't it? Or is it completely wrong? And it's nothing to do with that at all. You, and it's that, you know, the mayor of Minorca was killed by a clock landing on his head. I don't know. No idea.
No, you have touched on several vital points. Onanistically, this is the news that the Balearic Islands of Ibiza, Mallorca and Menorca will not be putting their clocks back this weekend after voting to break away from the rest of Spain, chronologically speaking.
Because they're up all night anyway, aren't they?
They're just not opting in. They're not opting in.
What's the point of talking about Ibiza to a Radio 4 audience? Como. Oh, yes, there we're with you, Mark.
No, there's bound to have been a Radio 4 documentary about it that they've listened to in shock at some point, or some form of Money Matters, or a Moral Maze, probably, about it. So the thing is, they can't... If they want to not join in the clocky thing, the clock's going round, as Mark puts it, but they can't change it because of Europe. Because it's a European thing, which actually is quite positive, because now we're leaving Europe, I think every city should
have
its own...
We can have whatever time we want.
Well, we should each...
If we want it to be 4 o'clock in the afternoon when it's 1 in the morning, we can!
Yes. The problem is that Spain, the people in Spain, want to have more sunshine, and that's fine for them. I would like more sunshine as well. I live in Glasgow. Sometimes we see sunshine, and it's like seeing a picture of sunshine. It's there, but there is no heat coming from the sun at all. I think we would all like more sunshine, Spain, but, you know, we're stuck with what we've got, quite frankly. But it's Europe, so each city can now have their own referendum on what time they want, now that we're not part of Europe. So, you know, Manchester could be the same time as New York if they wanted to, quite frankly. I'd like to see the United Kingdom with all different time zones and different cities. Sod it, why not? Let's go for it. You have to change your watch every time you go into a different city. It'd be a lot of fun.
Francis, Vicky, have you had any recent moments of clarity?
No. How is time going to work?
Well, it's going to be it's going to be absolute mayhem for them.
How will time exist?
The clocks will go round.
And then they'll go round.
I'd like to take this opportunity to remind all Radio 4 listeners to put their clocks back this weekend and come home from Ibiza. This is going to cause enormous confusion for anyone consulting their timetables about when to catch the Wenger bus. It's nice to hear the word Ibiza again, as it brings back fond memories of Francis and I honking Class A's off of each other before skinny-dipping in the Med. What an armistice day that was. Still, I think I speak for everyone here when I say thank goodness we've managed to get out of Europe just before those pencil pushers in Brussels forced us to rename Greenwich Mean Time the Islamic Baguette Clock. 2 points. 2 points to Captain Clarity. Oh. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Vicky.
Yes, I've got one. This is taken from the Warrington Free Cycle Circular. It says, wanted, small fridge. I need a small fridge big enough for one elderly person. Thanks, Bob. And that's sent by somebody called Linda Heaven.
Mark.
Right, this is sent in by Rahul Joshi, and it's from a fish and chip shop in Tunbridge, Kent. Gluten-free Mondays at Saltwaters. Gluten-free fish and chips available. Fried in batter containing no gluten ingredients. All fried fish available in gluten-free batter. All due care is taken with your order, but it may contain gluten.
Susan.
This was actually sent to me directly by someone on Twitter who spotted it in the programme of their local theatre. It's actually an advert for my own show. And apparently the people of Nottingham are in for a real treat. Show is 110 minutes, including internal.
Now let's take a look at the final score. Francis and Vicky have 9, but this week's winners are Mark and Susan with 10. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Hitchin Comet, sent in by Judith Duggan.
Cats Protection offers a free neutering service for people on low incomes to halt excessive breeding.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Wien, Vicky Pepperdine, Mark Steele and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Alan Smith. The chair's script was written by Max Davis, Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch and James Kettle, with additional material by Dan Kiss and Robin Morgan. The producer was Paul Sheehan, and it was a BBC Studios production.